This is the Larry Mueller Show. I am Jill Nadeau. Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network. Our guest today challenged himself to write an essay a day for 365 days straight. We'll talk with him about the process and the resulting book, A Year in Words. David Haysnoe is in the studio with me. He is a writer who has spent the last three decades working for others across many disciplines, but in 2013, he decided to write his own book. What helps motivate you to write? Do you have questions about David's experience? We'd like to hear from you. Join in. The number, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. David, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Jill. This is cool.
Yeah, well, we like to think so. Now, you decided to write an essay a year, or day, for a year. What motivated you to do that?
Well, as I like to tell people, it was a scheme hatched by Joan, my wife, and I one night when we were sitting on the deck, and we were both kind of commiserating about our careers, and as you mentioned in the intro, I'm a writer by trade. Started out as a journalist, and for many years I've been doing a lot of writing, directing, and producing of videos and other types of corporate projects. And as a writer, as somebody who's relatively creative, or I like to think so anyway, every once in a while you wish that you'd do something of your own, and you always have things that are half-baked, half-done. I have hundreds of essays and plots and characters and things that are lying all over the place, mostly on the computer now, but some in hard copy. And one night I was kind of commiserating, and Joan said, well, when are you going to do something for yourself? And I knew that that wasn't a question. That was a statement phrased as a question.
Yes.
In which she was saying, you are going to do something for yourself now. And so we started playing around with some ideas, and she said, I think we should start a website. I think you should start a website, and I think you should write stuff that you can post. And so we started thinking about how's that going to work. And I thought the only way I'm going to be accountable and the only way I'm actually going to do it is if I decide to write something every day and post it. And so then we tried to come up with some sort of a theme. Was it going to be 100 words a day, you know, for a year or whatever? And I didn't think I was a good enough writer to be able to say what I was saying in
That's
only 100 words.
That's difficult to be short, yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the next logical step up was 365, right? 365 words for 365 days. And I thought, okay, I can do that. And I'm still kicking this around on the deck this Friday night. And what would you call it? And we played around with some things, and we came up with A Year in Words. I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. And I'm still just kind of sitting there, kind of enjoying being outside on the deck. And Joan says, all right, I've got the domain registered. Now, when are you going to start? And that threw me. And so I said, well, I guess next week. And so I made a few more rules for myself after I started. And again, to be more accountable to myself than to others, because I didn't know if anybody was ever going to read any of this, nor did I really care at that point. Again, I wanted to have every essay be at least 365 words.
And these are the rules you created for yourself.
These are the rules I created for myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to prepare. I wanted to get up in the morning. I wanted to write what was on my mind. I wanted to give it a cursory edit and then post it by like 7 o'clock in the morning.
Which means you get up at what time, David?
I got up anyway. It depended. Well, it was interesting because the first couple of days I got up around 5 o'clock. And I would write, and I'd post it, and then I'd move on to the next day and the next day. And after a couple of weeks, I started waking up earlier because maybe due to the anxiety of having to put something out.
Oh, sure.
Or because I would wake up with an idea. And it'd be like, okay, I'm old enough now where if I don't write this idea down right now, it's going to be gone within like 10 seconds. So there were a lot of early mornings. But then I posted it, and then I put it out, you know, on Facebook and on my own website, and I just wanted to see what it did. And again, it wasn't about being perfect. It was about getting something out there, maybe getting a reaction from people every once in a while, and seeing what happened. And as it turned out, I ended up writing anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 words every morning.
That's a lot.
In fact, I wrote one essay of the 365 that was exactly 365 words because I wanted to prove to myself I could do it.
Okay.
And I really didn't have any ideas that day. Mm-hmm. So I made that up. But yeah, so that was the genesis of it. And then, but probably about halfway through the year, I thought, you know what, maybe I'll compile this into a collection. And, mm-hmm. and put it out there and see if anybody wants to read it.
Now, number six on your rules was not worrying about if anybody else read it.
Right.
So why did you decide to add that to your rules?
I think that was influenced more by Joan, because I think by definition, when you put something out there, you do worry about other people.
Right.
And what that does is that becomes a limiting factor that keeps you from getting something done, or it continues to make you want to make something perfect, and
right.
and it'll never be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was, this: you're doing this for yourself, David, and if people like it, they like it, and if they don't, it doesn't matter. The goal was to do it,
mm-hmm.
and so the activity itself was the goal.
So sometimes that fear of not being perfect or not putting out something someone would like will stop you. Is that mm-hmm. where you were going with that?
Right. And I equate that exercise to music, where to me, it was like the writing version of playing live at a bar or at a small venue versus recording in a studio. It wasn't going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And the expectation wasn't that it was going to be perfect. It was going to be what was coming out of my brain and onto that computer screen at that moment.
And that's part of the joy and the,
yes.
the magic of it.
Yes.
Now, you say in your introduction to your book, and you just said earlier that you've started a bunch of projects over mm-hmm. the years. What was the difference between those projects and this one? And you completed that, obviously.
I think it was simply the mandate.
Okay.
It was between the two of us, we said, we're going to do this. And I think, too, Jill, in previous years and before, there was social media and there was the barriers to get something out into the public were a lot greater.
Yes.
It was easy to work on some things and go, oh, I got too busy, or oh, maybe I don't like that story. Once I said to enough people that I knew would read it, like family and some
sure.
friends,
they
I'm going to do this, then there was an expectation that it was going to get done.
And when you did come to, you sat down at your desk, you in your basement, right? Is that mm-hmm. how you wrote it? And you're sitting there, and the clock is ticking, and you didn't come up with something. What did you do at that point?
Believe me, I'm not boasting about this,
uh-huh.
but for some reason, that rarely happened.
Oh.
And I think part of it is because when in doubt, I could always go back to a childhood memory.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Or there were a couple of days where I would just start writing and I would just tell the audience, whether that was an audience of one or a million, I have nothing on my mind today. But then as I'd go along explaining how I had nothing on my mind, something would come about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a firm believer that, and that's what I do, is I just sit down and I start writing whatever's on my head. And I'm a believer that if you do that, sooner or later, something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And but some days were more difficult than others.
And a lot of your essays are almost stream of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And part of that is intentional, because I truly wanted a lot of these essays to get the reader to understand what goes on in my mind. And
mm-hmm.
so a lot of it is written intentionally in a very manic, frenetic style.
Sure.
But on the other hand, The other real goal for the essays was to let everybody know that my stories aren't any different than anybody else's. We all have these moments in our day.
We do.
We have times in our lives that we love, that we didn't like so much, people we experienced. And I guess if nothing else, I just wanted to tell everybody this is just my version of the same story we
mm-hmm.
all have.
And that's one of the things we wanted to kind of get you to talk about, is how other people can go about this. Now, you've had years of experience writing, so not everybody's going to be as polished as you are with your essays.
Mm-hmm.
If you had, you know, a couple of tips to give people to say, hey, you know, here's how you go about it, or here's a good way to start, what would you tell them?
Well, first of all, luckily, you don't need any real qualifications or tools to write. You just need your own imagination. And I guess I would say, don't, kind of like we were just talking about a little bit ago, is don't worry about what other people are going to think. And that's the hardest thing. It really is. I don't care what you're doing. If you're an artist, if you're a musician, if you're a writer, even if you're an engineer, I mean, it's like we worry about what others are going to think. And I think you have to really do your best to try to get that out of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then just start putting words down and tell a story the way you think, not the way you think it is going to be correct or technically sound. Just start telling a story in your own voice. And that's the main thing, is people will read something. People want to read something that's in your voice. They don't want to read stuff that they in a style that they've seen a million times before.
And it's hard to write in someone else's voice. So if you don't have that experience, it's not going to sound as good,
right.
Is it?
Right. And the other thing, too, and I was just talking to somebody last week who writes a lot of creative stuff for other people. And I think there's always a temptation to use a lot of adverbs and adjectives and words to make us look like we're really learned. And yet, even the most intelligent people out there don't speak that way.
No.
And so I think be honest with yourself and with your audience and use very plain speech and try to have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. And one thing about writing dialogue is that it doesn't sound natural most of the time.
Right.
If you've noticed when you've read, it doesn't. So when you do find that, and your dialogue sounds very natural, was that something that comes pretty easy for you?
I probably love writing dialogue more than anything.
Okay.
And in fact, it's interesting because I hear this in TV spots, and I actually can't believe actors are willing to say this line. But I can't tell you how many times I can't tell you how many times recently I've heard the line "What the?" Have you ever in your life, in real life, heard somebody say "What the?" and then stop, unless they were being ironic or trying to be funny?
Right.
And so some of those things, I like to bring a realism to the dialogue that I write.
Sure.
And it's just fun for me.
Yeah. So do you remember the dialogue well, because you are writing about real things that happened? Or are you remembering it in your own way?
Well, I think anytime you write personal experience stuff or memoir stuff or anything like that, I think it's always, you know, based on a true story as I remember
of
it, right?
Course,
so
of course,
most of it
yeah.
is paraphrased.
Sure.
I will tell you that there's one of the main characters. Obviously, Joan is a main character in the book. And my cousin, who's been my best friend since we were 3 years old.
Cousin/best friend, Mike.
Mike, right. Some of those lines I remember verbatim because we still recite them back to one another.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, we take some creative license
sure,
to it.
Sure. Well, we are talking about motivating yourself to do a writing project that you maybe always wanted to do. What comments do you have about your attempts to write? What information would you like to have Dave share with you? Well, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45, we'll talk about some of this year's best children's books. Hope you can stay with us for that on the Ideas Network. But right now, we'll get back to talking with David Haysnoe about his book of essays. So, David, do you have some favorite authors that you like to read?
I do. I bounce around a lot. I always have trouble with the term favorite because I can never narrow it down. I mean, when I was younger, I really liked John Steinbeck as a fictional writer.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped on the John Grisham train early on as well. When it comes to nonfiction, I think David Sedaris is the standard.
Uh-huh.
And he would be the person that I think you would not strive to be like stylistically necessarily, but just from a standpoint of telling personal stories and being so candid. I'm not quite as abashed about being unabashed about being as candid as he is. But I'll tell you, massively entertaining. I mean, there's just a lot of different authors I like.
Yeah, I got the David Sedaris a lot when I was reading the essays. Not that you're talking about the same things, but you are in a broader sense. It's mm-hmm. personal observations, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily something that someone would come out and say, "Oh, you should write about that because that was amazing." Mm-hmm. They're everyday things, like you had mm-hmm. mentioned before, but you do write them in a way where I laughed out loud, and that's always a cue for me that I know the book is going to be good if I laugh out loud, which I did. So
well, thank you. That means the world to me. It really does.
Yeah.
It's interesting because a lot of them are lighthearted and funny.
They are.
But then there are some that are have a lot of gravity and emotion to them. And
mm-hmm.
I wanted to have a little bit of mix. I wanted some of the more emotional pieces to be a little bit of a palate cleanser so that you're not always operating at a certain level.
Right. Well, we do have a call, and Linda is in Middleton. Hi, Linda. What's your question?
I would actually like to ask you, what is your favorite book about writing or your favorite author who writes about writing?
Thanks for that question, Linda. And I will tell you, I would say this is one where I do have a favorite. Stephen King's book called On Writing, and it is the first half of it is autobiographical, which really gives us a nice backstory about the conditions and the way his upbringing, which I think really sets the foundation for the second half of the book, in which he talks about how he goes about writing and his style and how he came to that style. And I think it's interesting because you have that first part of the book where you get to know who he is as a person. That really helps cement, whether you like his writing or his books or not, I think you have a real respect for how he goes about his craft.
Okay. Thanks for that question, Linda. That was a really good one. And next up we have Lou. She's on in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Lou.
Hey, good morning / almost afternoon. It is so refreshing to hear that somebody else has a zillion projects and characters waiting in the wings. And I too, and you've inspired me to do kind of the same thing. I'm going to bring my photography into it and do a kind of a daily writing / photography, but it will be at the end of the day, and it will be focused around my thoughts, what I've learned, what I've observed. And so we'll go that direction. But I have a couple books. I have a couple movies. I have a photography project that I need to get going on. And people have read one of my short stories saying, why aren't you finished? When are you going to finish this? And it's not that easy. People just don't understand, who are non-writers, that you can't just sit down and throw everything out and have it work. You're constantly editing. You're constantly worrying about, well, is this going to sound right? How is this going to come across? So thank you so much for doing this. And I can take all my comments off the air. Thanks.
Thank you, Lou, and good luck. We want to hear from you about that book, by the way.
Yeah, Lou, have you been rifling through my file cabinet? I think that's great. And I think anytime you can put visuals to words, I mean, she's set up perfectly. I mean, I always think that anytime you can tell a story in multiple ways, I mean, obviously that's going to go a little bit farther. But no, I think that's great. And it's good to know that there's kindred spirits out there. We all have that big bushel basket of things, that unfinished business, that unfolded laundry out there.
That's right. Or those notes on the phone.
Oh. Yes.
Been there, done that.
Yes.
Yeah. There's genius there. Just
oh, yeah. Oh, my
how.
Gosh. You don't even know the amount of genius that's sitting latent right now,
it's
in
true,
my
though.
Home.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. We just need that inspiration on how to do that. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you've written about. You had mentioned earlier you wrote a lot about your childhood. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is good fodder for your essays?
Again, I think part of it is because I grew up not too far from here in Watertown, in a very middle class, blue collar family, with a basic childhood, riding your bikes and being in the Cub Scouts and, doing all the things that kids did back then. And what I try to do when I write about my childhood is not to commiserate about, kids these days don't understand what it was like back then, but simply to celebrate some of the things that we did as kids. And they were just easy stories for me.
Okay.
I mean, I had so many really good, vivid memories. And all very simple things, and some not so vivid memories, which we've turned into kind of humorous stories. Like I have a 5-part series on my failed experiment at being a Cub Scout.
Yes.
Okay. I just wasn't cut out for it. Okay. I get
some
it.
Some people aren't.
The scouting was not going to be part of my thing, but it made for a couple of good stories.
Yeah.
I've had, I think, 4. What I would call near drowning experiences. I think 2 are in the book, and But, you know, even that now, it's like we come back and everything turned out okay, so let's make it funny.
Make it funny. You almost have to.
Right.
Anything you can make funny makes it better.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. Well, the one I really liked, and there was a lot of different nuances to it, but talk about your car that you made for the Cub Scouts. So it was the Grimace.
Yeah, so the Pinewood Derby was kind of one of the big events of the year for any Cub Scout, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, I don't know what it's like now, but back then it was, you get this, you know, this block of balsa wood or some sort of wood. I'm not handy
something
at all.
Soft.
And, you know, a couple of nails for axles and plastic wheels and everything. And they give you this thing and they give you a couple of weeks to work on it, you know, and you say, and then you race these things. And, you know, so my dad was actually less handy than I am, if that's possible. And he had really no interest in helping me craft this thing. Craft, that's with a small C, certainly not a capital C. And I have an older brother, Mark, who he was extremely handy, but only a little more interested than that. And he wasn't really living at home when I was in the Cub Scouts. He was kind of in and out, but he helped me a little bit. But we crafted this. And so, of course, I waited until, like, I don't know, the day before the race, because that's what you do, right?
Course,
I mean, why would you work on this? And so I made what I thought was a serviceable car, and this thing was, I felt really good, you know. I mean, I felt really good about this, and we got there, and well, as it turned out, there were some pretty seriously designed cars here, and people, they, like, guys, you know, they were like trying to test out the weights, and you got like a certain amount of lead or graphite or whatever it was, I don't even know, some sort of a thing, and you could put it on different parts of the car to make it go faster, and guys were like oiling their wheels and stuff, and here I am with this thing that looked like the Grimace, because it was purple and it was kind of rounded, and it was kind of fatter on one end than the other, and it looked kind of like the old, like a purple version of the old, like the police cruisers you'd see in like a 1950s movie, you know, these big, huge, heavy things. But I thought, oh, what the heck, you know, let this thing rip. And mine, I think, made it about 3/4 of the way down the, you know, it's basically a miniature version of the Soapbox Derby, right? And
yeah.
I was out in the first round, but that allowed me to go and spend some time with the lunch ladies or the people working in the kitchen and eat some hot dogs before everybody else, and it all worked out.
I mean, see, that's what I really liked about it, is the fact that I could just see this little boy, you know, kind of looking like Charlie Brown, because, you know, the Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Very much so.
And, you know, how sad, and these racers are around him, and he's like there with this, you know, sad car, and you know what's going to happen. But then you turned it around, and you know what? It was okay. It didn't ruin my life. I got hot dogs.
but you're right. That car was kind of the Pinewood Derby version of Charlie Brown's Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like where he puts the ornament on, and it just goes over.
Yeah.
But you know, that's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes. Absolutely. Do you have a question for David about writing an essay for every day for a year? Give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. 800-642-1234. And of course, you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Do you have a story that you'd like to share with us that you think would be good as an essay? And maybe David has some tips for how you can turn it into one. Please join the conversation. So let's talk about that blog. How many people did you actually have reading it? Do you know?
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I believe that there's during that first year, I believe that there were probably a couple hundred people or more that came in and out. Since then, that's grown quite a bit, and I've done a little bit more work on social media. But honest to God, Jill, I just keep, because now I still write weekly essays and I post them every Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't even check that stuff, to be honest.
That's
with
probably
you.
A good idea, because like you said before,
you can only be
matter.
Disappointed.
That's right.
I mean,
lovely idea.
Right.
You can only be disappointed. Okay. Now you've got two websites. So the original one was A Year in Words.
Correct.
.com.
Yep.
And then is that still active?
It is.
Okay. And that's just the year, though?
You can find, I think we archive another year. Again, I don't even know how this works.
Okay.
This is like, but actually, I think the better bet is if somebody wanted to experience current essays to go to davidhaznow.com.
Okay.
And no one's going to know how to spell my last name, so.
H-A-Z. NAW.
Correct. DavidHaysnow.com.
And you have you've been doing some events too, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done a few appearances. I got an opportunity to do an appearance at a bookstore in my hometown, which was then called Tribeca Cafe and Books. And I will be there again on Saturday, December 14th.
Okay.
At its current, it's been rebranded now as Literatus and Company.
Yes.
And I would encourage you, if you're in the Watertown area, to please stop in. They have some really nice stuff and a nice cafe, and stop in on the 14th. I was at Mystery to Me here in Madison in October. Beautiful bookstore. Really nice people, too. Mm-hmm. Really loved hanging out there. And I will be in West Bend at All In Books on December 7th as well.
So are you doing your own publicity?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah. Okay. For right now, we're just seeing who might have some interest.
Sure, sure. What's that been like for you? Because you're promoting yourself.
Yeah, that's I'm a lot better writer than I am promoter.
Not everybody can do everything.
But I'm it's getting easier.
Okay.
And as I get a little bit of traction and people are starting to take some interest, it gets a little bit easier. It's interesting because I know some other people who have written books who have some special interests where they can, you know, they can identify specific demographics or regions or people that might be interested. This book is purely entertainment. And so that means, by definition, it's for everyone, but it's also for no one. So,
no one in particular,
right? So that gets to be a little bit of a challenge sometimes. But you know, so far we're making phone calls, sending out emails, and again, kind of like using that band, you know, that live music analogy. It's like, kind of, if I'm available, I'll go anywhere, anytime.
Okay. And they can contact you through your website.
Yes, so correct.
If anybody's interested in having you come and talk. So let's talk about actually putting those essays together. You said about halfway through you thought, maybe I could put these together in a book. So what did you do at that point to make that happen?
So when we decided to make it into a book, I felt that I just wanted to self-publish it because I wanted to have a book.
Sure. And that's so much easier to do now.
Right. And the barriers to entry, the barriers to entry are so low. And to be honest with you, I just wasn't up for trying to pitch something to a publisher at this point. I wanted a book.
Right.
And I had the content. So I found somebody an editor in Michigan who helped do the layout. We selected the essays, had somebody do a little copy editing and layout, cover design, and I think the nice thing is that I started putting so much of this content together before I wanted it to be a book, so it wasn't as hard to make it into one. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah,
instead
totally
of so
makes
like
sense.
Now, if you talk about a next book, or if I'm going to do something different, now I'm starting from scratch with that intent.
Yes,
which is a lot different. Mm-hmm. What do they always say? You have your entire life to make your first album, and you have a year and a half to make your second one. Right?
True. True.
But it's a fun challenge.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to say that the book itself, even though it's self-published, it doesn't look like it's self-published. So you picked good people to do that. How did you find them?
We found our editor simply off of a website of freelance editors, and we've
vetted
a couple of them, and she worked out really well. My brother-in-law took the cover photo.
Oh, nice of him.
And so for those, I know this is radio, if you haven't seen the cover of the book, it's a longer shot of me sitting on a porch, which is my mother's porch, the back porch of the house I grew up
where
in.
You grew up. Mm-hmm.
And there's a brick wall.
Just
next
like Charlie
to me.
Brown.
Right.
Wow.
But if the book starts out with an essay called Thunk, and it's about how I taught myself how to throw, catch, and field a baseball. Throwing an orange rubber ball against a wall while I was listening to very early days of Milwaukee Brewers baseball, and that's the wall. So luckily, for all of us. My mother still lives in that house after all these years. And I thought it was appropriate. But you wouldn't really know that until you actually dig into the book. So,
right. Now, you talk about your mom and your family a lot in the book, mm-hmm. And friends. Did anybody have a problem with you putting their life out there?
No one has said anything yet.
Oh, they're talking behind your back.
Well, that's true, too. Well, but I think the other thing is when we go back to talk, we were talking about other authors and how they open up. There's some, I mean, everybody's got things that aren't the most positive in their life. And I try to avoid that kind of stuff. I don't think it does anybody any good. Obviously, not everything I write in there is positive, and my daily essays, there are some things that are very personal to not only to myself but to some others. But the nice thing is, when it comes to my mom and my siblings, we know each other very well, and we know what's fair game and what's not. And when it comes to my friends, I tried not to go too far down any kind of a hole on mm-hmm. anything,
because most of these are you. And what your reactions were and your foibles.
There's a lot of foibles. There's a lot of foibles.
Yeah, you definitely paint yourself as someone who can get himself into trouble, but has a really good outlook and hits his head a lot.
So, I do hit my head a lot and and always have. And but you know, the other thing is, too, is if you read, when you read something and it comes across as something that's negative, or I'm complaining, or there's something, or I say that I don't agree with this opinion, or I'm judging something, I usually follow that up with, realize that I'm part of the problem too. So I'm trying not to throw stones at people. You know, I'm trying to push us all into the same shower of stones, you know, as it were. So,
what did you learn about yourself through these essays?
Not a very good writer.
I would disagree, but
well, thank you. No, I. What did I learn about myself? I learned how powerful vulnerability can be. Mm. I've always believed, because it's in our society, if you're a guy, vulnerability is always looked at as a weakness, and I think it's a massive strength. And I'm not afraid to show my vulnerability, whether it's in something self-deprecating and funny or something very, very personal and emotional. What I've learned since I made appearances is that I cannot read anything out loud to people that is at all serious or emotional, because I won't make it through the first paragraph.
Oh, well, I think that's, yeah, I understand that. Because, well, you're not a trained actor, and, you know, so.
It's true.
Yeah. How did you decide which of these essays, because not all the essays are in the book.
Right. So, well, that was probably the toughest process.
I would think.
Unlike, you know, I'm not going to make that cliched, you know, these essays are my children, so I all love them the same.
Thank
I don't.
You.
There's some of them that I hate, and you know, and I have to admit, I don't hate either of my two children. So that's not a, you know, that's not a really good analogy to make. But there were a lot of them that just went by the. I started out by just process of elimination. This is one that was very timely. I wrote about something that was in the news, you know, that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. that took a third or more of them out, and then I went the other way and said, these are the 20 that I know I want in there.
Okay.
And then I went down the middle and, mm-hmm. and filled it in.
Mm-hmm. So which, were there like topics that you really thought came across better than others? Or it just happened to be the way you presented them?
I don't know, because again, I wanted it to be a mixture of This is a stream of consciousness piece that's very manic. This is an emotional piece that pulls at the heartstrings. This is a story about my childhood. They all just kind of hit me as a yes or no.
Okay. It's just instinctual.
Yeah.
You knew if it was good and should be in the book. Yeah. So do you have any plans for doing a second book with the ones that didn't make the cut?
Yeah. So I am currently working on trying to compile another group. So this group, and not all of these that are in A Year in Words were from the first year.
Okay.
Almost all
okay.
of them were.
Mm-hmm.
But I did throw a couple in from later years. But I am working on another compilation that is going to span pretty much the entire 6 years that I've been doing this.
Okay.
And then I have some ideas for other things that might take me in a little different direction.
Like what?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Jill. I like to observe situations and people and then make up kind of a based on a true story what could be happening. So fictional pieces, but based on things I've seen.
Sure.
Very short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Street musician and an old guy that comes up to him and they're talking on the street and I don't hear the conversation, but here's what might have been going on, that kind of a thing. And I probably have about 20 or 25 of those now, and I'm trying to get enough. I think that would be a fun exercise.
Yeah, definitely, especially if you put the, this is the picture, and then this is what I think is happening. I think we kind of do that ourselves, so.
Well, again, right, yeah. So what I like to do is I like to write stuff that everybody, not to say I'm saying what everyone's thinking, but it's like we've all had these before, right?
Right.
We've all had these experiences before. We've all sat there going, are those two breaking up? Or are they on a first date? Or what, you know, we've all done that.
We have. Well, great. Well, we look forward to reading that. And thank you so much for coming in today, David. We appreciate talking with
thanks
you.
Thanks for having me. It was a hoot.
Good. Well, we've been talking with David Haysnoe. He has a book of essays out called A Year in Words. And you can read more by going to David's website, davidhaysnoe.com. And that's H-A-Z-N-A-W. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up next, recommendations for books you can give to children. Stay with us.